Hi, my name is Bob Stonebreaker, and I'm an alcoholic. And I run around and attend meetings with people who belong to the Fourth Dimension group, and we have about four meetings out here in Santa Monica, West L.A. area. And one of the things we do, we try to find out and practice the clear-cut directions in the Big Book. And so as we may get back to the original program as it was many years ago, maybe back in the early 40s, where the sobriety growth was so wonderful and the success rate was so good, especially in Clarence Niger's group up in Cleveland, when all they had was a Big Book and the program was the same as a fellowship. This tape is meant to be mostly an in-group tape, and we're not authorities here. Be aware of the procedures as Big Book lays it out. It said further on, clear-cut directions are given, on page 29 of the Big Book, and indeed they are clear-cut here, but it doesn't mean they're uncomplicated, and I really needed a little help to get this thing all together, and this tape is to help one to reach into the book and find out exactly what it says and how it says it, and lay it out in such a way that it is an easily understandable whole, the process of going through the fourth step. So that is the purpose of this. I am not, of course, an expert on the book, but I have done it many, many times over the last many years, and it comes very easy to me to see what is where and how it flows together, and it may be of some help to you. It isn't that I know everything about step four, or don't pretend to. The reason we do step four, in the Big Book, there's only one Alcoholics Anonymous fourth step. Around the fellowship, you'll hear lots of people talking about lots of different kinds of fourth steps they do, and the treatment centers have what they call step four. They imitated from us and pretend like that. And some people do. Maybe they've done the Hazelton four-step. Well, the question is this. How do you expect to get the Big Book promises if you do the Hazelton step four? You get the Hazelton promises. But for these, I mean, the promises are great here in this book. Like, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. And this is the promise that's in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was the main one I shot for. There were a lot of other ones, but that was the reason I got here to begin with. So I'm glad my sponsor set me to follow these clear-cut directions in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a great confusion from one end of the United States to the other, I find, about where the directions to do the steps are. So a lot of people think the directions are in the 12 and 12. They are not in the 12 and 12. This Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells us when to do the fourth step and all the steps. The 12 and 12 does not tell that. The Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Big Book, tells how to prepare for step four. The 12 and 12 does not tell how to prepare for it. The Big Book tells exactly and precisely how to go through the process of the step. The 12 and 12 does not tell that either. The Big Book tells you the promises you get from the fourth step and what you're going to find out. The 12 and 12 does not tell the same thing. The Big Book shows and tells how all the steps flow together and make them as an easily understandable whole if one really studies this thing. And the 12 and 12 just simply confuses a person. And the 12 and 12 causes things to happen like people think, well, smorgasbord, or work the steps backwards, or take what you want and leave the rest, or something like that. And that has nothing to do with getting well by going through the process.
Hello, this is Bob again, but it's about 13 years later. What you've heard before was recorded in 1988, but due to technical problems, actually the old tape started talking real fast on us. We had to reconstruct it. So the same information will be presented to you again, but it is now 2001. And it shall now continue back on page 63. So open your book to 63 and be prepared to start. Thank you. Okay. Well, let's go to the bottom of page 63, and where it says, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action. The first step is a personal house cleaning. Notice that launched out business. It doesn't mean we're going to hang around too long. We're going to launch out, which many of us had never attempted. Though a decision, that step three, was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Now mark at once and put a little TT there. That means timetable. And so that's an important thing. When do we do step four? Well, when do we do step three? We'll get more into detail on that in just a few minutes. And the rest of that sentence says something else real important. It said, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of. Mark face and mark be rid of. See? This is why we do step four. Man, what a powerful sentence this is. This sentence tells us not only when to do step four, but why we're going to do it. Now, that's a lot of news to people. A lot of people think step four is like, well, I put down some awful things about ourselves and have to tell somebody about it and be punished for it, and then maybe we'll feel better about ourselves or something like that. But no, this is learn to face and be rid of. In other words, we're going to find some tools right here in step four to face and be rid of these things which have been blocking us off from the great power, which is God, who can help us. Our liquor was but a symptom. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. Now these causes and conditions are simply the ingredients we are going to use in step four to activate the tools that are going to teach us to face and be rid of. We're going to learn a spiritual tool, and we're going to learn a psychological tool right here in step four on resentments. But how are we going to get down to causes and conditions? How are we going to find out the things which ourselves have been blocking us if we're not honest? Most alcoholics are terrible liars. We had to be at least liars to ourselves, because we've probably learned by now that an alcoholic cannot drink on the truth. An alcoholic can only drink on a lie. And we drink. So we got to be liars. If we were truthful, and so we never would have continued on. Our minds would have worked properly. But like we probably learned back in step one, our wires are kind of crushed up there. And we don't think right. Now, a question for you is this. A question for me is, how can a dishonest mind write an honest inventory and put down these causes and conditions and find out what they are? Venture down to the second full paragraph on page 64, and it says, we did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. Mark the word honestly. Now, how are we going to do that? Our mind doesn't work. We might have to use something different than our mind. That might sound a bit bizarre, but I'll tell you something. I was just to the International Convention up in Minneapolis this year, and I heard a guy who was 53 years sober who claims he was to the first big book step study meeting in the world of Alcoholics Anonymous out in Los Angeles, way back when. And he said that even way back then, that would have been probably 1947 or something like that, that they believed in spontaneous writing. Well, the big book doesn't say about it, but it does tell us, it does say to take stock honestly, but there are no directions how you're going to do that with your dishonest mind. See?
Just like you can use willpower. Oh, I'm going to be honest now. Well, that doesn't seem to work very well with alcoholics. We trick ourselves. So this is what I was taught. I got sober out in California, and this is how what they taught me to do, and it worked for me, and I haven't had a drink since either. So, but this is what we did. To take stock honestly without using our good, keen, intellectual, alcoholic, lying mind. We took four pieces of paper. On top of one piece of paper, wrote down resentment. Write down, God help me, I'm doing my inventory. And another piece of paper, write down guilt. God help me, I'm doing my inventory. Another piece of paper, write down fear. God help me, I'm doing my inventory. And sex on another piece of paper and write the same thing. Nothing wrong with sex, but it's a strong drive in the world, and we can put a lot of things under that category. And I was told, do not write any words, scribble, but do not write. Do not think. If you think, don't write it. Thinking doesn't count for this kind of thing. You scribbled, and not only one word at a time, just one person's name, one place, one thing that reminds you, jogs your mind. It doesn't matter. Nobody's going to read it but you. And just scribble things down there. And sit down immediately after doing step three. Now, this is where that at once on the third line down on page 64 comes in. Very, very important. When I did step three, I mean, remember I mentioned that great effect. And it says at the top of page 64, their decision was a vital and crucial step. It could have little permanent effect unless at once. See, permanent effect. Well, I've had a permanent effect. And I did do it at once. My sponsor didn't say, well, we're going to do step four tomorrow. We started writing right away, this spontaneous writing, which is connected to step four, immediately. Within, I'm not going to say seconds, but within minutes of saying the third step prayer, we were writing this stuff down. Scribbling. I took it home and scribbled more. And I took it home and scribbled more. I woke up at midnight and scribbled some. And I went on. Before long, but I'll tell you, in 10 or 15 minutes, I had more honesty in that paper than 6 weeks of thinking that I ever got there. And probably wouldn't have been honest anyway. So this is what I call step 3.5. It's a fourth dimension kind of a deal we do here, but it's not step 4. It's not in the big book, and it's not big book directions. And if you don't like it, don't do it. You know, but this is just some sharing that you get extra on this tape that you didn't bargain for. But it's wonderful. It really works. And I do it with everybody I sponsor. I have them to do this wonderful preparation for step 4. Spontaneous writing. See, God writes everything down, not your mind, because you've had this great effect and God just pours over into it. If you didn't do step 3 with all your heart and all your soul, sadly, I don't think you'd get very much out of this spontaneous writing at all. It's only for the people who are serious. And if you haven't done steps 1 and step 2, came to believe, and became willing to believe, I don't think you could do a step 3 with all your heart. But timing is very, very important. Do not, if you're sponsoring somebody, do not say, well, we did step 3 now, we're going to do some spontaneous writing next time I see you. No, do it right away. The step 4 itself might wait a few days, but this should be right away at once. See? And okay, let's go to the third full paragraph on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Well, that's real good to know, because that's what we're doing. It says 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, followed by 10, 11, 12. We're straightening out the spiritual malady, and then we can straighten out mentally and physically. I don't think we have to wait till a big toe quits hurting or something like that to get in on this, or the fact that we're perfectly mentally well. Of course, I think we're not going to come in here with a hangover or still going through detox or something like that. But The thing is that there's a lot of hope in that, because once we get spiritually well, we're going to straighten out mentally and physically, and that's what our problem is. Our problem is mental and physical. If you remember, it's a mental obsession coupled with a physical allergy. Okay. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. Well, you got your chart with you there. If you have these tapes, you probably have a chart I sent. So for you and the people in the room, probably should all have a chart in front of you. If you don't, just take a piece of paper, 8.5 by 11, lay it on a horizontal way, landscape they call it, and draw a line, a column, vertically up and down it. And in that space above, write down resentments. And then just write down the things which you're angry with. And you've got them right there because you did your spontaneous writing. That's all there. Plus other things you thought about later on, obviously, you'll put them down there. That's the first direction. That's pretty simple. The next sentence says, we ask ourselves why we were angry. Well, naturally, we're going to make another line down a couple inches. And just put down why you're angry for each one. Maybe two words of, you know, what they did to you to make you angry. That's simple, you know. So that's your first two columns right there. Now we'll get five columns in a row. We're going to hear the same thing said twice. Here we go. In most cases, we found it was our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. Now here it comes again. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? There we hear those same five things again. So make five little vertical lines about, let's say half an inch. That's all they have to be. And up and down. Go across those. And one of them, of course, one you'd put self-esteem, one security, one's ambitions, one's personal relations or sex relations. Well, self-esteem, we all know what that is. That doesn't need to be explained. Our security could be financial security or emotional security. Doesn't matter. Put it in there. No sense of going to a great deal to specify exactly what all that stuff is. This is a tool to learn to face and be rid of, not just to get everything exact perfectly down there. Our ambitions, that's political ambitions maybe, or any kind of ambitions you had, write them down there, personal or sex relations. So you got five columns. Those are going to be done by just little check marks. I heard you say that. Check marks. You think, well, what's check marks mean? I don't mean nothing. What does mean a lot, my friends. Because every little check mark is something you're going to talk about at length when you get into step five. So this is not something superficial, just little check marks. This is real important. Because it's going to prompt your mind into the more particular details, which you don't need to get into right now. This is just a way to prepare you for step five here in step four and show you a few tools. Okay, so you go down each one of those one at a time. First you go down self-esteem, put little check marks if it affected you, and our security, okay, and then go down our ambitions, then our personal relations, then our sex relations, and we're done. We got little check marks up and down there, crosses, however you want to put in there, don't matter. And by now you've got some names down, and you saw who did things to you, what they did, and how they affected you. Well, we made a big start on our step four part of facing and ridding ourselves of resentments. This is the time when you might want to leave the room. If you're sponsoring somebody at this time, down at the bottom of page 65, it says, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. Well, that's something to do. So if you're sponsoring somebody, don't let people just put the check mark down and rush on to the next thing. Let them consider it carefully. Leave the room. If you live in California, Florida, walk around the block, come back. Here in Indiana, we got to go in another room of the house or something like that. But don't stand over somebody's shoulder while they're doing this stuff. To continue, the bottom of page 65, the first thing apparent was this world as people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But the alcoholic whose hope is of maintenance and growth, I like that maintenance growth, of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found it is fatal. Mark fatal. For when we are harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit, the insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. We may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things were poison. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see the world as people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancies are real, had power to actually kill. That's me. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. Ah, this was our course. That's what I love about the big book. It tells you what they did. See, not what you ought to do so much. It tells you what they did. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Well, so I understand that. I've been spiritually sick. I've done lots of spiritual sick things when I'm drunk. Have you? You know, and so I can't look down my nose at those people the way I was before I read that. Now I begin to see that I got to put myself on the same level as they. I am not some kind of a spiritual giant looking at wrongdoers. I am wrong too. So that puts us on an even keel. Makes things a lot easier. Next it says, we ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, now mark these four parts of this prayer separately. This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done. See? Well, this is a spiritual tool. And you notice nowhere in that tool does it say, which is almost AA lore, folklore, to pray for the SOB or something like that. No, it's not. This prayer is all for ourselves. It's not for the other individual. Now, this is a sick man. Well, this shows me to get myself in a humble position. I'm no better than the person who harmed me. How can I be helpful to him? Now, isn't that a lot more powerful, asking God to show me how I can be helpful to that person I hate, rather than just saying a prayer for him and say, that's kind of passing on. This is much deeper than that. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. This means I realize I can't stop myself from being angry. See, if myself is angry, I can't stop myself being angry with self. Self cannot rid self of self with self. See, I got to have a power. I got to have God to help me on that, that it won't go away. And last it says, thy will be done. Give up my will. Once again, just like in the third step, take it away. Take away my will and do your will, God. And this is a wonderful tool to face and be rid of resentment. This is a spiritual tool. This is a tool that is used for people who have harmed us terribly, have despitefully used us, despitefully used us, did bad things to us, and they were completely in the wrong. Let us say that, just for sake of it, they were completely in the wrong, but we have to learn to stop that repeating thought of anger because it's going to kill us. And this is a way to do it. Somebody says, well, does that mean I can't pray for the guy I hate? Oh, the big book says you can do anything you want to in that respect. It says, see where spiritual people are right and so on. Norman Vincent Peale wrote a wonderful prayer back on page 552, and I use that all the time when I'm angry with people and have repeating thoughts of anger. But that is not step four. That is a good tool to use, but it is not step four. Well, remember we talked about doing the tools. We're going to do the tool right now. Pick up your paper or your chart, whichever you happen to have in front of you, and the first column might say Mr. Brown. The next column might say Shot Me. And then the check marks with respect to self-esteem, security, ambitions, personal relations, sex relations, either check mark or not. And when you get to N, stop there. Now is time to say this four-part prayer. If you're sponsoring, of course, you leave the room. Don't look over somebody's shoulder while they're saying that prayer, and let them say this four-part prayer for each person on the list. There might be 10 or 15 people on the list. Who knows how many? And so just have who it is go across horizontally each one and stop at that heavy line we have there in our chart and say, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. And this is the spiritual tool. And when this is finished, come back to the room and start on what we call the logical tool or psychological tool, if you prefer. Let's go down to the second full paragraph, which says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? That self-seeking and frightened is one phrase. So, look at your chart now, and you've got some space left on the right-hand side. Make three vertical columns out of that space. And in one of the columns, write the word dishonest at the top, the next one selfish, and the next one self-seeking and frightened. Now what is to be done is to go across the line, and once again, Mr. Sponsor, Ms. Sponsor, you leave the room and allow the sponsee to go through this on his own. I'm resentful at. We're going to go horizontal. Mr. Brown, he shot me in the kneecap, affected my self-esteem, my security, my ambitions, my personal relations. Oops. Well, it didn't affect my sex relations then, but okay. So go on. Well, where was I at fault? Was it my fault? Well, I don't like to think about it, you might think. You know, say, but nevertheless, you put it down. Yeah, well, you know, I got to tell you the truth, actually. You start thinking, you think to yourself, if you're doing it yourself, but you say, yeah, I was dishonest because, selfish, yes, self-seeking, frightened, because actually I was stealing out of his safe when he shot me. That's why he shot me. So, because we fess up and we see that we were at fault. So this becomes a logical tool. And it is not rational to be angry with somebody, if you are the one who caused the whole thing to happen. So, write logical tool off to the side of that paragraph. Now, we've learned two tools. One is a spiritual tool. One's a logical tool. That doesn't mean there's not a thousand other tools you can use. Go and beat your pillow if the psychologists tell you to, but don't. But this is the Alcoholics Anonymous tool. These are two of the wonderful tools we have to face and be rid of resentments. Yeah, you can say, I see how you'd be thinking. Well, it's never one way or the other. You know, you're partially at fault. The other person's probably, anybody's been through a divorce or, as a matter of fact, you've been married even. You will see that both are taking place at the same time. It's very seldom the other person was completely in the wrong and you were completely in the right or vice versa. So, but these are tools we can use to face and be rid of, which will save our lives. Remember, resentments will kill us, and we're willing to go to any length to get rid of these. So try this wonderful, Alcoholics Anonymous tool. It's been working for 65 years or so now, and
I'm sure it will work for you.
This lesson will engage itself in finding what the big book has to say about ridding ourselves of fear, especially irrational fear, and being able to face and rid of our inability to see the harms we've done to other people, especially sexually. Let's go to the bottom of page 67. And it says, notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties of Mr. Brown, Mr. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we did deserve, but did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think it ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Then it says, we reviewed our fears, we put them on paper. Uh-uh. Well, we got a direction, haven't we? We got the clear-cut direction. Well, take up 8.5 by 11 piece of paper and divide it in three columns, either way you like, either portrait or landscape, it doesn't matter. And this is going to be one of the most simple directions you can imagine. It says, for our first column, what we're going to do with that, it says, we reviewed our fears thoroughly, we put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. So just make your first column on your left-hand side, just go down and write the fears that you have that's been bothering you. Where do you get those? Well, you remember the spontaneous writing we did, right there they are. And also think over, remember some of the things that weren't on there, well, put those on if they belong there. Okay, now we're going to think about the next column. It says we ask ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Okay, write a question at the top of the second column. It said, has reliance on self failed me? Well, what a question that is. You wouldn't still have the fears if reliance on self would have worked. Reliance on self worked for most of us when we were in certain grade, whatever it was, in school, and they put that multiplication table up there. And we thought, boy, we could never ever learn all that stuff. But within a period of time, we learned it, and self-reliance worked for us. We rely on ourselves, and we did just fine. But there are certain things that this self-reliance hasn't worked for us, because we'd be rid of them by now if we would have. One of us quitting drinking. Well, another one is we got right here is the fears, these especially these irrational fears that crop up all the time. That feeling that the police car's behind us, he's going to get us for drunken driving. We haven't had a drink for 5 years, but still there's the fear cropping up. Afraid to go look for a job because you might not get it. Something irrational. There's also irrational fears that everybody has. Fear of the future, inferiority complexes of different kinds. And so just delve in yourself and you've already got those fears down there. Just see, does self-reliance solve all those? Well, it might have solved some of them as the years have gone by, but certainly not the ones that have been bothering you, driving you crazy here in these last years and shutting you off to the sunlight of the spirit. So along the next column, next to each fear, write the word yes. Did self-reliance fail me? Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Yes, it did. It failed me. And that's as simple as the second column is. Okay, let's see about that third column, what to do. Let's go to the third full paragraph. It says, we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and to direct our attention to what he'd have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. Well, there is another clear-cut direction, isn't it? What is a clear-cut direction? Right, here it is. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he'd have us be. Another two-part prayer, as Bill's prayers almost always are. Out to the side, write fear prayer, and write that prayer at the top of the third column. Now, if you're sponsoring somebody, this is a time, once again, to leave the room. And if you're doing it, or your sponsee is doing it, the thing to do is go down that list, and each one, see what fear you have, come to realize in column two that you can't get rid of it by yourself. You have to have God's help. And in step the last column, you simply ask for God's help by using this beautiful little prayer. And this completes the section on how to face and be rid of irrational fear. Now, what could be more simple than that? You can complicate the dickens out of this kind of thing if you want to, but there's no point in it. It says in a big book, the last sentence there on that paragraph that we were in, it says, at once we commence to outgrow fear. So that's the end of it, folks. And I hope this will work for you. Sure worked for me. I still have fears, but nothing like they were. And I think fear is a root of my anxiety. It's a root of my hatred and anger. It's a root of my dishonesty. It's a root of my selfishness. I think fear is the root of all these things. When I start to get rid of fear, this is my own personal opinion. You get this for free here, too. But my personal opinion is fear is like, when it rarefies, goes away, all sort of things are attached to that fear, and they go away, too. It's almost like taking a block of ice, solid as can be. Call it, say, that's a big chunk of fear. You put it on the stove, a hot stove, and all at once it begins to melt. That's called rarefaction. The molecules get further and further apart and go faster, faster and faster, and they get further apart. It's after a while more, it turns into steam, and it goes off and flies in the air and disappears completely. It's all gone. Well, this is what God can do with our irrational fears. And when those begin to leave, we begin to see other defects of character just leave us too. It just happens. That's the miracle of it, like the big book says. And I think this is the key to it. So this is because this is simple, don't think it's not important. This is a very important exercise to learn how to do. Now don't forget, you know, we learned to do something back last week, that face and be rid of resentments. Now we've learned how to face and be rid of fear. This isn't something you learn once. This is a tool you use that's going to be used in step 10 every day all the rest of your life many, many, many times. It isn't something you do once and boop, gone. No, that ain't it. That ain't what it is about. This is a lifetime project. We're learning the tools by which we are going to live the rest of our life. It's just this important. So don't take this trivially because it's short. It's very, very serious. Okay. Now we're going to talk about harms to other, especially sexual situations that we get ourselves in. Page 68, down toward the bottom. It says, now, about sex. Many of us need an overhauling there, but above all, we try to be sensible in this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who call for sex and more sex. They be, well, the institution of marriage who think the troubles of race are traceable to sex causes. They think they do not have enough of it or isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school will allow a man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. Don't you just love the way Bill writes? We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? Now, on this next paragraph, you're going to find every word that's in the chart that you have in front of you. I hope you have a chart. If you don't have one, stop right here and write down my address, and you can send it to me, and I'll send you one. Just to be confidential, I'm Bob S., I guess. But I live at 212 Southwest 18th Street, Richmond, Indiana, 47374. Or you can phone me at 765-935-0130 or email me at bbbob@infocom.com. And I will send you some of these right away, because I think these little charts are really helpful to guide you through it. I'm going to try to describe how to make the chart up to you for you want people who don't have one, but it's going to be rather difficult. It might not be too bad. But as long as you just get close, see? No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles, it says. And do you know what anything like means? It means you don't even get close, see? but if you get just fairly close, you'll be going the right direction. And besides, you might know more about it than I do. I don't know. But this is just what we've been using over these last, well, it's been 14 years now we've been using these charts and stuff, and we've got great results with them. So that's all we know. We don't know everything. Don't mean to. Don't mean to imply we do. Okay, here we go with this chart. I'm going to read the paragraph first, and then I'll tell you how to make up your chart. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down in paper and looked at it. So all down in paper is like this. Make a fairly wide column, about 2 inches. Whom did I hurt at the top? And simply write underneath it who you hurt. Sexually. Especially sexually. This is sexually. Well, you harmed somebody, you lied to them, you jilted them, you did it for to get their money out of them, or some kind of selfish reason. And so that's one thing. The next thing is, what did I do? You put their names down the first column. The second column, what did you do? You lied, you cheated, you jipped them out of their money, or whatever you did on that one. So that's your second column. So simple. Now, the next big column says, did I unjustifiably arouse? And under it is these three little dinky newer columns, because you can put little check marks in them. One's jealousy. One, suspicion. The next one is bitterness. So you go down a column, and like Susie, jealous, did you make her jealous? Yes. And Mary, did you make her? Yeah. And said, what about Alice? Did you make her jealous? So on like that. And the same way with suspicion, the same way with bitterness. Now, that I don't know that that's so hard to understand and explain. Just put those little things down there and put little check marks there if you did or didn't. Now, we've done vertically so far. Now we're going to change. We're going to start going horizontally. On the next big wide column, write, where was I at fault? And under it, put three little subcolumns, little narrow subcolumns. One, selfishness, dishonesty, and inconsiderate. Now we're going to go across. Now we're going horizontally. Whom did I hurt? Mary. What did I do? I jilted her. Did I cause jealousy? Yes. Suspicion? Yes. Bitterness? Yes. Where was I at fault? Well, I was selfish. Yes, I was dishonest. And yes, I was inconsiderate. See? So I put that all down there. And this way I get a picture of myself. Okay? As unpleasant as it might be, but that's who we are. That's what we did. And what we want to take God, what God to take us away from into His world instead of our old world, because we certainly don't want that old world anymore, I hope. The next paragraph. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal toward our future sex life. We subjected each relation to the test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideas and help us live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor despised and loathed. Next paragraph. Whatever ideal. Now, every time you hear the word ideal, mark it, see? Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to go toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God, mark those three words, what we would do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone, mark God alone, can judge our sex situation. Counsel with other persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only half truth. It depends on us and our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have an honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and will have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, mark ideal, that is again, for each questionable situation, for sanity and the strength to do the right thing. Now there you've heard ideal mentioned about 5 different times. Now, sex ideal is not the same as an idea. You know, I had an idea that the wings of my automobile, yeah. But an ideal situation, if I want to go somewhere to get in a regular airplane and go, that's the ideal situation. And we want God's ideal situation for our sex life. You notice it didn't say we necessarily just go to our sponsor to find out what that is. We go to God to find our answer. After all, we just made a decision, step 3, just a short time ago, to turn our will and our lives over we're willing to go to any length. We're going to listen for God's answer. We believe God will answer us. Why is it important to go to God for the answer? This is going to be, folks, the last column over on your chart. What should I have done instead? Write that up there. And you don't know what you should have done instead, probably, if you're like me. How can you go to your good, keen, intellectual, crazy head and ask it what you should have done instead? You know the kind of answer you're going to get. You get a self-serving answer. You need to go to God to get the answer. I had a friend some years ago, this is 15, 16, 17 years ago, and he was running around with a young girl in AA, and he left his wife and family at home and sneaked around with her and made himself real guilty and made him go get drunk. And he stayed drunk for a year and a half or 2 years. He came crawling back into AA, and we did step four. And he got God's sex ideal for him. So he was sober for a few months, and here she comes out to where he worked at then, this workplace, and she wanted him to go out there again. And he had enough power, she was a very beautiful girl, to tell her that I like you very much and think you're very beautiful, but God's sex ideal for me was to be loyal to my wife and not to commit adultery anymore. And that gave him the power to withstand that temptation. If it would have been Bob Stonebreaker told him, that wouldn't have meant anything at all. He could change his mind about that in about 15 seconds. But God had the power, see? So that's why it's so important. We go to God for God's sex ideal. So when you're sponsoring somebody, have it at this point, pray to God for sex ideal. What is your ideal for me, God? Is a picket fence with a White House and 2.5 kids with a station wagon? What is it? Please let me know. It might be different for different people. Nobody's business but your own. But go to God and get the sex ideal and then follow it. Because remember, we're going to go to any length here to face and be rid of the things that have been blocking us, and being selfish and lying, uncaring, inconsiderate of others is one of the things that got us drunk all the time, see? So, God, that, you know, that's not going to be God's will to do those kind of things. So to each his own on that, but there are clear-cut directions right here. So use them. I'm going to reread this paragraph. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. If we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies. Remember, before we look at them as sick people, we have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. Mark, we have listed. Let's reread that sentence. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. Does that remind you of any steps? Well, it sure does me. What about step 8? Made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all? Well, by gosh, right here it is. This is a good place to start step 8 right now. Matter of fact, the big book's going to tell us to. It kind of told us here, didn't it? You know? Just take my word for it, and out to the left-hand side, write step 8. And then underneath that, write page 76. Hold your hand on page 70, and we're going to go to page 76. And go down to 1, 2, 3 full paragraphs, and in the middle of the third paragraph, I'm going to read to you what it says. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. Wow! So step 8 comes before you do 5, 6, and 7. So out to the side right here on page 76, write page 70 for reference. Now go back where you got your left hand. And go right back to page 70, and we'll reread this again. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. Well, why is this such a good place, you think, to do step 8? Well, I'll tell you why. You remember when we did the resentment list over on the right-hand side? What was the nature of my wrongs? Where was I dishonest, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking and frightened? You know, here I am stealing Mr. Brown's money. I'll be safe. He shot me or something like that, which is, I just made that up. But there you have it. You see, there's people right there we can put on our amends list because we're beginning to make our amends list. Now let's go over the fear. Here's Mr. Brown. The reason I'm afraid of Mr. Brown, maybe I was fooling around with his wife when he's going on vacation or something like that, bad or something like that, see? And I'm scared he's going to shoot me again for that, see? So that didn't happen either, but that's where you go to fears to get some of the stuff. And naturally, on our sex conduct list, it says, whom did I hurt? Well, right there's three or four right there. Put those down on a sheet of paper. So you've got a good start right now. Of course, when you get to step 5, you're going to find more stuff. But you've got a good start. Now, having said all this, where else are we going to go? Well, you guessed it. We're going to go right to that spontaneous writing we did. And remember, we had one under guilt. Go right to that guilt and start putting them on there. There'll be all kinds of things you feel guilty about, people you've done bad things to. It doesn't matter where you want to put them or not. It ain't got nothing to do with it. You just got to be willing to make amends to them. It doesn't mean you're going to have to. There's going to be special instructions in step 9 that might be a loophole to get you out of it, because you can't make amends to people if you're going to harm other people or yourself. So there's step 8 for you. That's when we start step 8, right in step 4. Bottom paragraph, page 70. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced that God can now remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision, step 3, and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, step 4, you've made a good beginning. That being so, you've swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. Okay, let's mark grosser handicaps. Well, what are our grosser handicaps? There'll be a big white space in your big book down at the bottom, and leave that blank except what I tell you to write. In a column on the left-hand side, in a rather small print of that big white space at the top, write selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Now, off to the right-hand side of that, write this. This is what has been blocking us. Or you say this is what's been blocking us from God or the power greater ourselves, whatever you want to say, but just blocking us is probably good enough. Draw an arrow from grosser handicaps down to selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Because that's what grosser handicaps are. That's what step 4 is about. Now, down toward the bottom, write this in that big blank space in small printing. We write our grosser handicaps in step 4. Underneath that, write, we tell our life story in step 5. Well, how many times have you sat around AA meetings and heard people say, well, I wrote my life story in step 4. That isn't what it says, isn't it here? Well, this is, we're preparing ourselves for step 5. Every one of those little check marks we made is going to be something we can elaborate on at length when we get to step 5. Step 5 is not about what kind of a dress you wore at graduation or what your parents' names were or whether your ancestors came over in a Mayflower or not. Your history is where have you been selfish? Where have you been dishonest? Where have you been resentful? Where have you been fearful? These are the things that crop up. These are the things all over. These are things to face and be rid of. These are the things. Somebody said, I like to write the good things about myself in step 4. The big book, you notice, doesn't ever say anything about that. I had a friend who told me, he said, well, I don't want God to take the few good things I got away from me. See, because what we're here to face and be rid of, to get rid of the bad things, but expose them to the light. And God will take them away from us, maybe in step 6 and 7 when we get there. So, don't forget our timetable. We're rolling right along. You'll remember that we do step 3 as soon as we do 1 and 2. We're convinced of 1 and 2, we're at step 3. Step 4 is at 1. Step 5 is first opportunity. We wait 1 hour, and then we do 6. And when ready, we do 7 and 8 was already done, and 9 is now, and we're at 10, 11, and 12. And if you don't think Dr. Bob and them did it fast that way, go back to page 292 and look it up. You'll see it's not a process you spend over a month or something like that. You rocket right into the fourth dimension right away. It's a wonderful thing, so don't waste time. I'll talk to you next week. We'll discuss step 5. Thanks for listening, and God bless.